It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. It's hour number two. So delighted that you're with us. I have such a treat for this summertime program, for this episode. It's something that many of us, not all of us, but many of us have to deal with. And it's sort of a hated topic. I think less so now, but are you in the market to buy a car? Did you say, oh my God, I have to get a car, but I'm going to drive this one into the ground? Are you flirting? You going to buy? You going to lease? Going to buy used? Going to buy new? Going to use financing? Not going to use financing? Cars are just like a very funny thing because I would suggest to you that, you know, for most of the people, it's like one of the most important tools you have for your work life. You know, because what you know, you have to think about, like, I got to get someplace, right? According to Auto Trader, it's a really good summer to buy a car because there's a lot of inventory out there. Discounts are deep and incentives such as cash back, low interest financing, particularly on sedans and subcompacts, are out there. It's unbelievable. But what's the right car for you? How can you actually figure out what is the right car for you? That's why I have brought on Mike Quincy, automotive expert from Consumer Reports. He joins us. He's been on the program before, but we are delighted to have him back. Mike Quincy, automotive expert. Talk about the process of buying a car today and how much that's changed.
Wow. Well, the cars these days, and it kind of sounds like a cliche, but they're better than ever. It used to be there was only one or two manufacturers you could count on to get a reliable, fuel-efficient car. And now, they're really all pretty good.
Really?
Compared to even 10 years ago. I mean, when people talk about getting the most car for their money, but they want a new car, I said, you know, have you checked out Kia? Have you checked out Hyundai? And they often say, well, aren't those the really junky Korean cars? And they say, absolutely not. They're fantastic. And they still, you know, pack a lot of value in. But I think what you've got going on today for buying cars is, you know, the whole interwebs thing. I mean, you've got all this pricing information. You've got all of these people giving their, you know, air quotes, reviews of cars. And, you know, some are better than others. And I guess, you know, being from Consumer Reports, I like to think that we're the best and we're worth, you know, buying a subscription to get really good, unbiased information. But there's tons of information out there in terms of what car you should buy.
If I pick up the Consumer Reports car buying guide for 2017, I'm going to find out that this is how much this vehicle costs the dealer. And this is how much I should pay. I mean, how much is reasonable amount of profit for a car? $500, $1,000? What is it?
I think under normal circumstances, it might be 2-3% above their cost. The challenge is finding out what is their cost. And again, you know, Consumer Reports has never been about ripping off a dealer. Obviously, they're in business to make money, and they should make money. The ugly fact that a lot of people don't understand is that car dealers actually make more money selling used cars than new cars. That's where the profit margins are. So there isn't as much sometimes leeway for a new car sale as people might think. And it also depends how hot the car is. For example, if the price of gas spikes to $4-$5 a gallon, people will be standing in line to buy a Toyota Prius, which did very well in Consumer Reports testing, 52 miles per gallon overall. But right now, Priuses and hybrids are going begging. I mean, the dealers don't want them because gas is relatively cheap. And when gas is cheap, Americans want big cars and trucks. So it depends on supply and demand.
Why do we want those big cars and trucks? I mean, is there a perceived safety in, I mean, I know that there are certain people who need those big cars and trucks because they're builders. They're in the business where they got to be schlepping stuff. But for most families, do you need a big gazunta car like that?
Overkill.
Overkill, right?
Oh, total overkill. I mean, my kids are in their teenage years, but when they were younger and we would meet other families in the neighborhood and they would have young kids too, and they all think, I need a Lincoln Navigator because we're about to have our second child. And 90% of the time you're driving around in this Navigator, which is an enormous truck-based three-row SUV, and it's empty. but to answer your question, there is a perception that bigger is better when it comes to the laws of physics. A larger mass will destroy a smaller mass, but that's not how you should look at crash test results. I mean, you need to compare like cars. In other words, you need to compare a Toyota Camry to a Honda Accord in terms of crashworthiness. You can't compare a Camry against a Chevrolet Suburban because it's not a fair comparison.
So let's go back into the car buying morass, which I have to say
is thick.
It is still thick.
It's very thick.
We cannot yet buy cars online, right? We can't really because of all the weird laws around, and it doesn't really work. Okay,
sure.
So I heard an episode of This American Life where they devoted the entire episode to spending, I think, the last week of a calendar year in a car dealership in Brooklyn or Queens. I can't remember where it was. It was so eye-opening, Mike, because what I learned was, of course, the way that these dealerships make money, you're right, on a used car, they're going to make a bigger margin. But on a new car, they're willing to lose money to move the unit if that means it hits a certain number for the end of a month and, more importantly, for the end of the year. So essentially, the best time for you to go buy a car is the last week of the year?
It can be. And you can get a great deal on a leftover model. By leftover, I mean if you're going car shopping in late December of 2017, the 2018s are already out. And the dealers are real anxious to get rid of their 2017 models. Now, if you keep your car for a long time, you asked before, good financial decisions, buy a really good car and literally drive it into the ground so you spread that cost of that car over a long, long time. If you keep your car a long time, buying a leftover model makes a lot of sense. If you keep your cars only a couple years, the second you drive that 27 model year car off the dealer's lot, it already has a year's depreciation. So you get killed if you turn your cars over quickly, but you make out like a bandit if you keep them for a long time.
So still the best financial, or let's not say the best, the more prudent financial decision would be, I'm going to buy recently used car, like the last couple of years, with a warranty. I pay cash. I don't get a loan. I drive it into the ground.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll get back to our interview with Mike Quincy from Consumer Reports in just a minute. While we're on the break, why don't you go flip through the old interweb and figure out which car you're interested in? Maybe we'll be talking about it next. Jill on Money, your financial questions answered, your car buying questions answered. 855-411-JILL. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Question, call anytime, 24-7, 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill at jillonmoney.com. One of the most frequently asked questions when it comes to cars and purchases that we field here at the program is, should I buy or should I lease? And that's why I'm so delighted that we have Mike Quincy, the automotive expert from Consumer Reports, with us to help answer the question, buy versus lease. Now, what about, everyone always will be like, should I lease or should I buy? And from my recollection, I did this story about 5 years ago, and when I actually crunched the numbers, that the cost of ownership was you know, for the sort of 3 to 5 year range, pretty close. But if you do drive that car for a long time, obviously you own something at the end of those 3 or 5 years, so you're in better position. Still the case?
Generally, yes. But sometimes the decision might not be so financial based. If you like a new car, then you like leasing because every few years you get a new car. And that's, you know, kind of nice and psychological and fun, and then that new car smell and everything. Another is kind of a peace of mind. There are a lot of cars in Consumer Reports testing that have, let's call it, shaky reliability record.
Okay.
Some German cars, for example.
Like what?
Oh, I would say a Mercedes-Benz C-Class, an Audi A4.
You mean like the cheap end of the high class brands?
Not. It's not always necessarily the cheap end. I mean, even sometimes a high end model like a Mercedes-Benz S-Class, which can be $100,000, has kind of shaky reliability. They're usually teetering on average or below average. But sometimes people fall in love with cars. And I say, all right, listen, if you have your heart set on that Mercedes-Benz S-Class, you've worked hard all your life, you really want one, here's my suggestion. Instead of buying the S-Class, which when it's out of warranty, it's probably going to cost you a certain number of appendages to keep running, lease it. Because just about the time when stuff might start be breaking on it, that's when you get to give it back to the dealer. But it doesn't make financial sense because you're spending all this money on a depreciating asset, and at the end of the lease, you've got nothing to show for it.
We got a lot of people whose kids are graduating high school, maybe graduating college, maybe a car is in their future. I always love when I put you on the spot like this. So, best car for kid under 25 years old, or cars? I'll give you a few different ones to try.
Sure. This is when the parent steps in, does a little research, and overrules their kid. If they're like a lot of certainly young boys and men, I don't. Do you call them kids anymore?
Yeah, we call them kids. I call the kids male, if they're under 40.
Young male drivers, let's say. They might say, "I want a truck. I want a big burly truck, or I want a Mustang GT or something like that." That's when the parent steps in and says, okay, first of all, Mustang GT, no way if you're on my insurance because it's going to be too much money. Secondly, we don't want you driving a truck. You're a relatively inexperienced driver. Trucks have a higher center of gravity. Forget about that too.
So wait, well, I want to stop right there because I think this is a huge mistake that people make when they have young drivers. And I had this whole fight with my sister about it, which is that getting the RAV4 may not be the best car for that 18-year-old because, as you say,
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't know. If you don't know what you're doing, you want to be in a sedan.
The best car for a teenage driver is a 2 or 3 year old Honda Accord, Toyota Camry, Ford Fusion. You want your teenage drivers to have the most advantages in terms of safety equipment. You want your teenage drivers to have a vehicle with stability control. And the newer the car, the more safety equipment. Forward collision warning, automatic emergency braking. These are the cutting edge safety equipment that are on new cars these days. And it's just so funny that you bring this up because as our friends are having their teenagers and go through driving and the knee-jerk reaction is, well, I'm going to put Junior in the old clunker because, well, he's just going to scratch it up anyway, and I've worked hard all my life. I'm getting myself a new car. And I usually stop them and say, you know, you need to actually turn that upside down. And they say, are you crazy? I'm not going to put my kid in a new car. I said, but your 10-year-old, 15-year-old clunker doesn't have stability control. It doesn't have all the latest safety equipment. So you want your kid to be in the newest car with the most amount of safety that you can afford. And they kind of sit back and they say, well, I guess. But I mean, if you put your kid in a new car, you're going to buy a new car for your household. Mm. You put your kid in that and they survive an accident. That's awesome. you put your car, your kid in an older car and doesn't survive, wouldn't you pay any amount of money to get your kid back? I mean, it's...
Now that you put it that way.
I don't mean to be like morbid about this or anything, but you know, don't get too frugal when it comes to putting your kid in a safe vehicle. And a big truck is not the best vehicle to put your inexperienced driver in. The braking distances in our tests are much longer. The handling is clumsy. The steering response isn't very good. Instead, you know, put your kid in a car that has good handling, good reliability, good safety equipment.
Okay. Remember when we would talk about, like, this brand is a good brand? And now you just said previously, like, you know, these Korean car makers have really turned their brands around. Are there certain brands that you are partial to? Just you, Mike? Like, are you saying, like, in the luxury, let's say, luxury sedans, like, what brand out there do you or your Consumer Reports, you know, coworkers, what are the brands that you like?
You know, it honestly...
Or is it model?
It ebbs and flows. There was a time that everything Honda made I thought was great. And now they've, in the last, I want to say 6 years, I mean, their Civic did so poorly in our testing that it wasn't recommended, like for the first time ever, just because its performance wasn't very good. And Honda did a quick redesign and put it back out and it got better. There was a time when BMW, I loved everything they made, but then they came out with this really complicated control module that was called iDrive, and it controls like the climate system and the nav system and the audio system, and it was so complicated and distracting to use, and they some of the steering and handling in their cars lost its verve, it lost its sharpness. We just tested the BMW 530i, and the 5 Series traditionally has done very well in our testing. This one is good, but it's not like the BMW it used to be. It really comes and goes. I think Nissan has fallen on hard times. When Renault bought controlling interest of Nissan, we saw a definitely watered down of their products. They just weren't as good as they used to. It really comes and goes. I think the brand that's kind of doing well, and if you want to say on a roll, I would say Subaru. Subarus have done very well in Consumer Reports testing. The new Subaru Impreza was redesigned this year. It is quiet. It's comfortable. It's reliable for an all-wheel drive car. It's fuel efficient. The legacy sedan is one of those ones that flies under the radar. It's really a much better car than you think they have a right to be. They also make a really fun rear-wheel drive sports car, the BRZ. They did this in conjunction with Toyota. And it's an amazing track car. It's super, super fun to drive. I'm sure all of Subaru's products are recommended by Consumer Reports. And again, it's an exciting brand, but man, they make good stuff.
So this category that's called crossover, what is that really?
It's the most popular type of car for sale these days.
And what is it?
A crossover is basically a car-based platform that sort of looks like an SUV. It's not a big hulking truck. It's usually not as big even as a family-sized Toyota Highlander. It's more like the Honda HR-V, the new Toyota CHR. They're kind of these morphy little hatchbacky things that maybe have a slightly higher ground clearance, sort of look SUV-ish.
Okay, we'll be back with our interview with Mike Quincy from Consumer Reports. We're talking cars in just a minute. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
K, IRAs, refinancing. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Broadway
is dark tonight. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, the phone number is 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We are talking cars. And Mark, what was your first car? What was the first car that you drove? A 1976 Ford Maverick. And was that your parents' old car, or was it just, well, how did that car come to be? So you bought it. Did you buy it yourself? $5,000? $500. Wait a minute. It was a 1976 car. What year did you buy it? You bought a 20-year-old car? Oh, my God. Okay. How long did you drive it? Five years is a lot. That's so funny. My first car was a 1974 Toyota Celica, a stick shift. Did you have power windows? I didn't. I didn't have power steering either, and it was a beast. Like, my father taught me how to drive a stick on that car, and the first time you're on a hill and you think you're going to, like, roll back and bash into someone behind you. So I'm riding the clutch like nobody's business. It was horrifying. My father's like, oh, my God, you're ruining my car. Anyway, I drove that car for a long time. I loved it. It was great. And then the first car that was really kind of like my car, because I shared that one with my sister, was a little Subaru. And, you know, then all of a sudden everyone started driving these big monster cars that we just, you know, we had long cars growing up. We just didn't have these big high cars. SUVs and minivans, they're all the rage. You got a big family, but maybe you don't need quite as much as you think you do. That's why we have Mike Quincy, automotive expert from Consumer Reports, to steer us in the right direction. Mike Quincy has the knowledge about every type of car, and you may be surprised to learn his view on the, I think, the much beleaguered minivan.
Say what you want about minivans, but they're the best family vehicles of all time.
And which is the best minivan, or what are among the favorites at Consumer Reports?
There's really two these days. It's either the Honda Odyssey or Toyota Sienna. The Chrysler Pacifica. Chrysler really, you know, invented the minivan and then fell asleep for 20 years. sorry, guys, in Auburn Hills, Michigan.
Oh dear.
But they redesigned their Pacifica. It did much better than the last model, the last Town and Country that we tested. Reliability is still a crapshoot, I think, with Chrysler products. All Chrysler products, even redesigned.
Really?
We just got they came out. Chrysler came out with the first hybrid minivan. It's a plug-in hybrid, which means you actually literally plug it into your wall outlet and you get certain number of all-electric miles before the gas engine kicks in, and then it operates like a normal hybrid. And for years, people said, you know, hybrids are awesome. Why isn't there a hybrid minivan? Well, listen, Chrysler went out and did it. And our first impressions are it's a really neat effort. It drives pretty well. It seems pretty fuel efficient. But again, is it one of those ones you lease? Because you're not sure if it's going to hold up over a long amount of time.
Oh, man. Talk to me about the Tesla. Do you know that that Tesla just entered the Fortune 500 in the 330-ish range?
Mm-hmm.
I think they sold 76,000 cars last year. That's it. It is has a market cap that's larger than Ford and GM.
Right.
It's insane. I mean, Elon Musk, I don't know if he makes a good car, but I'll tell you what. He sells this company, not the cars themselves, the company. And investors are flocking into it. They say this Tesla is the future. Is Tesla the future, Mike?
I think Tesla is breaking a lot of boundaries. I think Tesla is certainly sending a wake-up call to Detroit and maybe even Japan, Germany. The reports that I read suggest that Tesla loses money on every car they sell. So
that's some bargain there, huh?
Well, I mean, I can't speak on whether or not this is a good investment or not. The cars themselves have done well. The Model S did very well in Consumer Reports testing, a really high road test score, almost just you know put us on our ear with how dazzling some of the performance is.
Hmm. How much is that, a Model S?
A Model S is going to run you anywhere between $70,000 and $125,000.
Jeez, that is a lot of moolah.
And it's the car of the younger, moneyed set. You can't, if you give free the expression, you can't swing a cat in Palo Alto without in a Tesla. In the Northeast, you're still getting a fair amount of electricity from fairly dirty energy sources, coal-fired plants that have, grandfather clauses on that don't have to have really clean emissions.
Hmm.
And if you're going to a place where your source of energy is pretty clean, solar, wind, whatnot, then it's a different story. I mean, Tesla, I think, is going to be turning into, if not a car company, an energy company, a battery company. They're talking about selling these solar panel roof shingles. They built this enormous battery factory out in the middle of nowhere, Arizona. I think partnered with Panasonic. And you know, they're just looking at internal combustion engines and fossil fuels and saying, you know, that there's got to be another way. So when you look at it that way, you have to applaud them. For me, I'm I'm a road trip guy, and I have a sister that lives in Washington D.C. and that's about a 5-6 hour drive from my house in Connecticut. If I took a Tesla, it would probably double my drive time.
Why?
Because the Tesla, according to Consumer Reports testing, the Model S is getting about, you know, maybe 220 mile range.
And you got to stop.
And it's not necessarily a straight line to where the supercharging stations are. So you might do this kind of crisscross down to Washington. And to me, that would drive me bonkers. Mm. I especially the diesel models that, you know, have certainly gotten a bad rap lately. But even a decent 4-cylinder car, you can get down to Washington without having to stop for gas. You might have to stop to go to the bathroom or pick up a cup of coffee. But with Tesla, listen, my 17-year-old son says, you know, if I ever had the money, that's what I'd buy.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. The Tesla Model X is sort of this kind of weird SUV-ish, gull-wing-doored thing that did not do well in our testing. Filled with squeaks and rattles. The interior was not befitting of, you know, a $70,000-$100,000 car. I didn't care for the Model X at all.
All right, we'll be back with our interview with Mike Quincy from Consumer Reports. We're talking all cars all the time. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I am Jill Schlesinger. Mark Talercio is producing the show, and he is rocking it as always. Best producer in the world. I don't think I say that enough, do I? I really should. Mark has been up to a lot of shenanigans. Check out our YouTube channel. Search Jill Schlesinger. He's got all sorts of stuff up there. And what else do I have? An Instagram account, right? Anyone care about that? Some people do. Check out my Instagram. Is it Jill on Money or is it? Yeah, Jill on Money. And do check out our podcast, Better Off. You can get on Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. Okay, let's get back to our interview with Mike Quincy, automotive expert at Consumer Reports. If you had all the money in the world, what would be the car you would buy? I'm letting you indulge in your fantasy right now.
Well, I got to ask questions.
Okay.
Is it a day-to-day car? Is it a fun car? Is it the last car you own and you're driving across the country kind of car?
Okay, so if you had all the money in the world, a day-to-day car, which one would it be?
I would probably, I actually am quite smitten with the recent redesigned Audi A4. Despite my qualms about Audi's, hot and cold reliability, the A4 to me is everything I want a car to be. It's just the right size. It is comfortable. It's quiet. It has great handling. I could still get a manual transmission in it, which is what I would get. It's decently fuel efficient for an all-wheel drive car. The controls aren't horrible. I find the A4 to be immensely satisfying to drive, and in many ways, I don't see a need to spend more than that.
And what is that, 50?
Yeah, a nice A4 is about 50. And if I could, if I could afford something really stupid, I mean, I'd still probably get one of those. But that doesn't mean I don't love 911s, which is easy, $100,000. I love Corvettes.
Ferrari? What if you had to go like that range? If you said like, you can have any car in the world. You can have a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or a Maserati. I don't even know what I'm talking about right now, so I have no idea. But I'm just asking you that question.
So when you ask a car guy that question, the automotive fantasy, you know, changes by the hour, which is why we're so neurotic, because it's always I have more of a soft spot in my heart for older Ferraris than the newer ones. The newer ones are technically proficient, but they did away with the manual transmission, and I get it. I get that you know, the paddle shifters, the modern automatic transmissions, they shift much faster than you can. They can downshift faster. Blah 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 blah. Yeah, to me, it's not as much fun.
Right. So Why drive a Ferrari if I can't?
I would go for an older Ferrari with a manual. I still love old muscle cars. I love Shelby Mustangs. I love Mercedes made this really cute two-door convertible in the late 60s, early 70s called the 280 SL. You might see those, you know, flitzing around the Hamptons now and then. Those are just cute. I mean, I've always liked those.
And what if you had your last car, but you're going to do a big road trip. And maybe this is like a fun thing for people to do. Like if you're going to do a road trip and you rent a car, you're not going to take your car, but you want to just have like a good road trip car. What's your road trip car? You don't have to pull a 30 ton.
No,
whatever you're pulling.
No. It used to be a Volkswagen diesel.
Really?
Oh yeah. Because the Volkswagen Passat diesel, the last one that Consumer Reports tested before the whole scandal and them, you know, yanking that engine off of American showrooms, got about 600 miles of cruising range. You could drive from Hartford to Detroit and not have to put fuel in your car. In terms of, I'm a road trip junkie, and that to me is my candy. That's my nirvana. I love a super long cruising range.
If I walk into a car dealership and they want to sell me an extended warranty, yes or no?
No.
Never.
Unless the car has a traditionally horrible reliability record. Say you fall in love with a Jaguar XF.
Poor you.
Okay. It's a stylish car.
Whatever.
You always wanted one.
Yeah.
You got your heart set on it. I would say do some data digging. Look at Consumer Reports reliability data. And if it's a car that you love that has a poor reliability record, but you really want the car, I get it. I can understand why you'd get an extended warranty. However, in the last survey of Consumer Reports subscribers about extended warranties, I believe the number was like 70-80% didn't see a dime of it, didn't use it. Or you've really got to look at the fine print. What exactly is covered in that? Because the accountants at the car dealers, at the car companies, they're much smarter than all of us.
Yeah.
That they have data on components that may or may not fail. They know if something's going
to
break,
what not to.
What's going to break?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, we don't cover tires.
Well,
I love that one.
Years ago, Chrysler made a big splash about this lifetime powertrain warranty. What they didn't tell you, they probably did, but you didn't read it, is it wasn't transferable. So obviously some smart accountant, statistician at Chrysler said, okay, a certain high percentage of our cars only stay with owners 2 or 3 years. And in that time, the powertrain doesn't really fail. So we could say that we have a lifetime powertrain warranty, but it's not transferable. So when the powertrain...
You're the schnook who bought it 3 years in.
Exactly. Mm. And I don't have any evidence to back that up, but I got to think that the auto companies are hedging their bets a certain way. They know stuff that you don't know. So again, sorry the long answer for your question, but generally speaking, you don't get a really good financial return by buying an extended warranty.
Thanks again to Mike Quincy, the automotive expert at Consumer Reports and friend of Jill on Money. If you've got any questions, we want to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we would love to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. That is our phone number. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. Bum-ba-da-bum. By the way, how great is this? We got a question about auto insurance in honor of Mike Quincy of Consumer Reports. How about that? When should I get rid of my auto insurance collision? when. Okay, I actually had to look this up. And this is an important piece, which is, of course, you have to cover, you have to comply with your state law and carry whatever is necessary. But if you've got an old car and it's worth under $5,000, my insurance people tell me that's the time you eliminate collision and comprehensive coverage and you increase your deductible, because that's when it just doesn't make sense. And by the way, while you're at it, if you have your car insurance and your homeowner's insurance and in separate places, you may actually want to combine them. I spoke to a couple of insurance folks to check this out. There are real discounts when you have car and homeowners and umbrella liability coverage from one company. So I would absolutely check that out as well. Look, and as Mike says, the technology is just so much better right now. So I think that you should drive a car into the ground, but you should also be careful and you should be making sure that you take advantage of deals where they exist. Mark and his girlfriend are going out car shopping after this show. It's amazing. And guess what he's going to buy? What Mike Quincy says to buy. And Mark, what was the financing that's available? 1.9% financing. Now, I don't know. Everyone's got different negotiation ways to go about it. I just say get the best price, then talk about the financing after. All right? That is it. That is the show. We thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week. Who knows what kind of fun and frolicking we'll be doing. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. See you next week, and thanks for listening. Well,